Listen up.
All right.
Okay. Questions from the audience. Anybody have a question? Okay, either go to that. He's going to start with Hal, that far microphone back there. You can go back there. Or go over here. This is just the front people.
Okay, to the last speaker. A lot of conservatives put a lot of stock in owning gold in their portfolio. You very definitely said, don't depend on gold. So would you address that?
Yeah, that's almost a religious topic, isn't it? Gold? I don't mean to be facetious, but there certainly are a lot of people that do believe gold is God's money. But I think the Bible, I'll give you a biblical perspective. There's sort of five roles that gold have. And we have the old traditional role where gold was a valuation measure. So thousands of years ago up until several hundred years ago. And then there's a second one, which is more of a last day role, I call it, which is where now we're in a period of time where the world is now a closed system, really, a financial system. And gold really has a very, 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 very small role in the financial affairs of the world today. It's less than 0.5% of the value of all financial securities in the world. So it's a good investment from time to time, but it's not a preserve of value. I would not look at it that way. There's going to be some other roles that will be a little better. I talked about, and I don't know if I didn't, but the tribulation period gold has another role. Of course, it's worth nothing at one point. And then gold, again, has a very wonderful role in the millennial period. But so for now, we're in this fiat money system where everything is corrupt and quite deceiving. And there'll be times where gold's a good buy. Gary North called me, a Christian-hating, gold-hating Christian. Apparently that's an oxymoron. Because I didn't believe that gold was God's money, basically. I would just look at it as that. Gold is a lot cheaper now than it was before. And as an investment manager, portfolio manager, I would probably be interested in looking at it sometime soon. But that's all it is. It's just an investment, short-term investment.
I believe your comment was that it won't have any value during the tribulation. The last 3.5 years. Go ahead.
Bill, question for you. 1 second after the book, how real is that threat? Are they on Capitol Hill concerned about that threat? Obviously, with these countries with short-range missiles, ICBMs, nuclear weapons, and things like that, you alluded to the EM. Threat and how it refers back to like 1900 or something.
Well, you know, I've been at the briefing of these former CIA director James Woolsey, Tony Lopez, people that have worked in the Middle East, and they have been saying the last 6 or 7 years that we need to reinforce our power grids. Because we are that's our Achilles heel. And at that time, 5, 6 years ago, it was $5 to $7 billion. And we have squandered many, many more billion than $5 to $7 billion. I don't think there's a better investment than reinforcing our power grid. And it's just, I just can't believe anything has been done. I mean, we're six years into this and nothing has been done. Maybe the Republicans on the Hill will do something, but we need to reinforce our power grid because this, if the electromagnetic pulse is set off here and fry all our transistors, we would be back on it. It'd be a horse and buggy stage, and 90% of America would not survive 12 months. So with that said, I mean, how foolish. I mean, this is a number one national security priority, and nothing has been done.
It'd be a help lower the population like that, right? Maybe it would help lower the population like that. Yeah. Okay. Over on this side. Or to there first. Okay, go ahead.
Fiscal question. It seems like derivatives are going to be here for the future. So I'm curious, what percentage of kind of like the world's GDP is derivatives at? banks or how I said the wrong question.
Okay. I know a little bit about it, but I'll ask
derivatives. I was pretty sure I had a question. How much do derivatives add?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big, there's a lot of.
Yeah, I mean, there's net figures and there's gross figures. None of all the exposures. But
would you define derivatives for?
Derivative is a type of financial instrument, and there's quite a number of them. There's an endless number of them that derive, in other words, their value from another underlying security, maybe an equity market, maybe a bond, maybe a future interest payment, and they'll put contracts on these, so you sort of have securities on top of securities, if you will. And that number I had showed in my presentation, which showed the financial position value of all listed securities, including derivatives, was 13 times world GDP. So it doesn't add much. It adds a fair bit of instability at times. So that's about the only thing.
Yeah, and financial derivatives is something that's been watched for the last 14 to 16 years. There's a great concern about the derivatives. Long-term capital management in like 98, 99, when that was a $5 or $6 billion hit, that was the derivatives, hit as far as I know. And then the subprime fiasco, that was another major, major financial derivative hit. And basically, it's we can use jet fuel, for example. Southwest Airlines bet that the price of jet fuel is going to continue to stay high, so they hedge that. And there's other airlines, in many cases, they have cash to do it, but it's a form of hedging to protect the big swings in a commodity. And you have people on both sides of the bet. If there's big swings, there's big losses, which happened with the subprime derivatives issue. I think the notional value is now like 600 or 700 trillion, and that's what you're alluding to. It's like 13 times the world's GDP. These at one time, Warren Buffett called these your financial weapons of mass destruction, or something of that nature. But now he's a big player in the market, so I guess maybe he's figured out how to manipulate it. But you know, these 90% of the derivative trading in America is with our major banks, our major core banks. So there's a tremendous amount of exposure. As long as there's not the big swings in commodities or things that they bet on, that's fine. But if one day, again, we have some big swings, there's going to be some other massive future losses.
I mean, my understanding is that they don't make so much money off the derivatives, and that's why the number's so big. But the number's so big, I mean, it's like, is it really worth it? I guess it is, because they're there. But it just still asks, is it really worth it?
Yeah, because it pays commissions. There's large financial institutions with an enormous number of people coming up with these things inventively and do a good job of selling them.
Yeah. So my question to Wilfred is, in 08 when the market turned down, middle class investors lost a lot, and maybe some of them are still on the sidelines, I don't know. But I read a lot of commentaries in the stock market. I'm not a long-term hold guy, but more of a trading trends. And so you mentioned something that kind of struck a nerve with something I read recently about, the population growth decline. And one of the predictions was that in a cyclical fashion, that they're, predicting the next market downturn to be within the next year because of a certain, whether the boomers, maybe the millennials, were hitting a certain age group. Where they start spending the least and saving the most, and so that's when they were saying, "Hey, it's about time to, remove it." And I guess my question is that feasible? One, and secondly, it seems like the only people that really suffer are the middle class investors because, we know that the traders make money going down just as well, shorts and puts as they do.
Well, some of those things that you mentioned, particularly about the aging phenomenon, that's already had an impact on financial markets for some time. And I guess to the second part of your question as to when the next downturn would come, that's something that's extremely difficult to predict, and I don't really try to. I do try to look at risks and that type of thing. But, as I mentioned also in the presentation, we're in an environment where it's completely unorthodox, it's unprecedented. Things that are happening today have no benchmark. So it's very difficult to make those kinds of predictions. People are willingly playing the game. There's a lot of incentive people on Wall Street and everywhere else that, you know, have their poker in the fire. They want this thing to perpetuate as long as possible, and they're all in complicity, if you will. Not all, but the institutions are. So it's a hard one. There are no benchmarks.
This Federal Reserve money printing has profited. Very few people have profited from it. I heard Nina Easton on Fox one night, and she's with Forbes magazine, and says this quantitative easing has put a tremendous amount of money in the banks' pockets and a small group of individuals. And that's really weighted. It's a lot of the people in the middle class got burned really bad last time around. And a lot of them didn't participate in the markets. The other thing is, every time Obama says he is concerned about the middle class, I think of the fact he's trying to destroy the middle class. That's the way it is, because his policies are harmfully, greatly harming the middle class. And this is really a shame.
No, it's going to continue.
Yes.
Yeah. As I said, there is no free money. All that's happening is an organized transfer of wealth. Very little policies are put in.
My question is for Bill. In view of the recent national election, and in view of the things that we talked about today, how would you categorize Mitch McConnell, the Senate, and John Boehner in the House?
Well, they don't have a history of being really strong and tough. However, Mitch McConnell was a friend of mine in West Texas a couple of weeks ago, actually about a month and a half ago. And this is a real seasoned political friend of mine. And he said when you talk to Mitch McConnell in private or with a small group, he's impressive. But unfortunately, he hasn't been that impressive. So Mitch McConnell, it's going to be interesting to see how he runs the Senate as a Senate Majority Leader. I just wish we had stronger leadership than John Boehner and Mitch McConnell running the House and running the Senate, because this is a crucial time. And Obama got away with a lot of things because of the weak leadership of the Republican Party over the last 5 or 6 years. So this is a very unique opportunity, controlling the House and the Senate. They don't control the White House. But we are hopeful and prayerful there will be some strong leadership. And this is a shellacking that just took place. This was one of the biggest defeats the Democratic Party has seen in decades, almost a century in some respects. So, you know, the two-party system is both at fault. Both Republicans and Democrats are at fault for the condition of our country. Unfortunately, with Republican leadership during George W. Bush's time in office, our federal government increased by 50%. That's unacceptable. So a lot's riding on these guys doing a good job. Obama's going to draw his efforts, and his legislation is going to push more and more people away from the Democratic Party. But the Republicans need to be careful not to walk into some of these traps, like immigration and others. They need to show some compassion. However, immigration, we have people that are in the country illegally. So, you know, they just have to be real careful. So we're hopeful Obama will be held fully accountable until the day of his office in January 2017.
Okay, well, one for Wilford. Since the Bible predicts a cashless society, you know, I'd like to know when you think we're going to move into cashless. And then for Bill, related to amnesty or shamnesty, as I like to call it, I mean, given the fact that Obama just made a law out of thin air with these executive orders, I mean, to me, that the debate shouldn't even be about amnesty, but it's how he pushed this through, which to me means we're almost living in a totalitarian society. You can just ignore the separation of powers. So I guess what I'm asking is what is going to be done, you think, to push back against that? Or can anything be done?
Okay.
Well, and then beyond that, my wife is going to ask a question after me.
Well, I'll hit the cashless society question. First, we all like a cashless society, I think, from a convenience point of view. And it's very, very practical, very, very efficient. And so, I guess, in and of itself, a lot of these mediums that we use to translate cash aren't evil or anything else like that. But I think I was going to speculate on how it would come in. And I think we already have some early glimmers of why there is a strong rationale to go to a cashless society, and that is, again, having to do with the impotency of the financial policies, monetary policies that are brought into effect. And as I mentioned earlier, in quite a number of parts of the world, particularly Europe, you know, for the privilege of depositing your money, you're paying money now. It's a negative interest rate. And some policymakers and macroeconomic thinkers out there think that that's one of the solutions that central banks should aggressively pursue right now to pump primary into the economies, is to go to negative interest rates, scare everybody out of deposits so they'll spend it. But you can only do that if you have a closed financial system. You can't have alternate means of payment systems and that kind of thing. So you first got to have a closed. When I say closed, I mean that there's no cash. And that way they can enforce a negative interest rate. So that, I'm speculating, but that would certainly be a reason why that would come into place at some point.
It's fascinating, the cash side is the convenience of just using a credit card, not carrying cash. It's amazing the convenience of the mark eventually. You don't have to carry IDs, passport information, credit card, you just scan. I mean, it's so fascinating the way the enemy is bringing in his system through convenience and personal security. So it's an amazing dynamic. As far as the Constitution, Alan Dershowitz, Harvard lawyer, said it's going to be very interesting to see what happens because there's never really been a test of the executive orders and if they sue Obama because of executive orders, it's a gray area. It's an area that's never really, truly been tested. And, you know, these things could go to court and can take a long time. And it seems like Obama knows that this is an area that he can pull off, that he can do what he wants to do. And just like a lot of his policies, you don't take don't ask, don't tell back. You don't take defense and marriage back. You don't take same-sex marriage back. That's the evil of those policies. You can't return. I mean, you've lost that territory. It's hard to regather. So I think it's the same thing with immigration. He's going to do the same thing. I think it was in 88, Reagan, when he did some form of amnesty, it was about 8.8 million of the illegal immigrants in America. What has happened is a lot of the major banks, especially the West Coast, they have given the immigrants a tremendous amount of money. They when they've loaned the money, they've been paid back. This has been good business for them. And it's been good business for a lot of corporations that work in the Southwest. I mean, cheap labor, hardworking labor, reliable labor. And one quick example, I have a friend with Barron's Magazine, that's owned by the Wall Street Journal. And he's a Catholic, and every few years he goes to Ohio and goes to visit a friend of his, the priest. And he went to the church a couple years ago, and he said, "You lost half your members. You know, where are they?" He said, "Well, we had a lot of legal aliens in this church, and they were forced to leave the country. But what happened also is the companies in the area were forced to close because the white kids and the black kids connect not pass the drug test. And if you can't pass the drug test, you can't be insured. If you can't find the employees, you've got to close your company, close your factories." So it's a very big, huge, grandiose problem. And we let it go for a long, long time, and there's a lot of companies who are there to provide the resources to create this incentive. And Obama, it's about votes. Everything he does is about getting votes. 46 million people receiving food assistance today, that's voters. 14 million people coming into the U.S. illegally, that's voters. That's the way they look at this and these kind of policies. And at this point, I don't know if he can be stopped. Or how will we stop?
Not to mention we don't have to pay for their own kids. In 2008, the financial crisis, have you heard that that was actually a terrorist attack? I mean, have you heard that maybe some foreign bad actors were finding vulnerabilities in our system? And could that happen to us again if we make the necessary changes?
I mean, there's lots of rumors, and I haven't been able to substantiate any of them. What happened is perfectly explainable without any conspiracy theories, I think. Things did get very, very extreme. Some of the things that Bill talked about, they just weren't sustainable. And that's one of the things about financial markets. They have that property. They can allow us to be diluted for a long time, but when it ends very quickly. And there were a lot of uneconomic, speculative positions built up in the world's financial system. It just melted down overnight.
Yeah, Kevin Friedman, who lives in this area, lives out in California, wrote a book about it. He's a former Wall Street guy, a real nice Christian brother, and he believes that there's just an enormous amount of money. The Saudis and some other sovereign funds that had a tremendous amount of money were able to manipulate some of the stocks, especially some of the puts and calls, some of the options, and they were able to have an effect in the market. It's a pretty extensive book. It's pretty believable. And but a lot of it, it was legal. I mean, it was illegal because they just used a tremendous amount of money to manipulate the markets to the point that it helped lead to a crash. So, it's cool still.
Why would the Saudis want to crash with all the money they had invested?
To make more money.
I mean, how would they make more money?
By option trading, option trades, puts and calls. Stuff like that.
I got a question for
you.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll understand
it better than me, but...
Yeah, but it is happening again. Progressively. The same, we're going to extremes again. New extremes.
Some of the micro traders, some of the, Goldman Sachs, some of these big Wall Street firms, they able to get a trade in before other massive traders. There's a lot of shenanigans that take place at Wall Street. And only the people who have enormous amounts of capital and very sophisticated technologies can take advantage of this. They talk about looking into it further. What about the Federal Reserve audit? I mean, that doesn't prove it. Nothing happened. I mean, they went to court. The court says, no, yes, you've got to show your books. Have they shown the books yet? No.
The thing to realize as well is that, all the financial professionals that I would know when I talk to, who are in the know on some things, they know that the ultimate consequences are going to be terrible. They all know that. But knowing that, it breeds this short-termism culture that we have right now. When the time to make money is, you got to make it. And that's why you get some big speculative positions put in place very rapidly. So that's the kind of attitude that we have. Ultimately, it's going to end, but everybody's trying to make it before it ends.
Mm-hmm. Very much be around. I got a question for Wilton. You seem to intimate that fiat currencies, which of all the world's currencies are today, won't collapse. Yet we've seen that in Germany in the 20s, we've seen it in Zimbabwe, and we've seen it in Argentina several times.
Yeah,
can you explain this a little bit further?
Yeah, I'm not suggesting individual countries can't collapse. That happens. I mean, you look at the record of international crises, bubbles, currency crises, just over the last 30, 40 years, we've had 50.
Yes,
at least.
Yes.
But I meant in terms of a global core financial system. That must be maintained at all costs.
So what you're saying is the dollar will never collapse?
I won't say that.
Well, that's the core currency in the world.
Well, it is right now.
Yeah. Right. Well, so
those things can change. But I'm saying the basic structure of a unified monetary system, financial transactional system around the world, at all costs, it must be sustained. And at one point, it won't, but I think that's inside the tribulation.
Yeah. Okay, but up until that time, what do we do as just general people in order to manage our money properly? I mean, I understand you don't be in debt, you pay off all your things, and you save your money, you plan for retirement, all that. I've done all that, but what do you do here going forward? In the light of many, many things can go very wrong, very quickly. Stock market can collapse, the dollar can collapse, lots of different things. How do we, as people who are responsible
and accountable to God to manage our money properly, manage our money properly in today's world.
That's the big serious dilemma today. A lot of people need some information in those areas. Unfortunately, there's not a lot you're going to be able to do about it. Unfortunately. A lot of these sophisticated money managers who have means of moving around money quickly and can trade may have a better ability. That's one of the problems that I as part of our ministry, I don't give any investment advice. Stewardship advice, yes. But simply because anything I say 5 days from now may not be relevant, and I won't have an opportunity to set that straight with you. That's the kind of environment we're in. So I don't give any specific advice, but I would, you know, such as you said, you have to pursue stewardship number one. And then beyond that, the only investment advice I give is be very broadly diversified and go about your life in a God-honoring way. That's all you can do. And the rest of the time, you're just going to drive yourself crazy and try to do anything else. A
couple of questions for Wilford, but sharp ones, I hope. Bitcoin has shown up, and although whatever it is, but do you think it could be a precursor to some kind of end-time scenario for making the governments of the world kind of out of the picture and controllable by a smaller few persons?
I've looked into the Bitcoin. It's interesting. There's lots of currencies out there. It's done the best of all of them, and even at that, it's been extremely volatile. There already is a prototype for a one world currency if the false prophet should decide that he needs one in the tribulation period. I don't really think it's going to happen until then. If it is, it's going to happen. And that is the special drawing right that the IMF has. That's already been incubated since the early 1960s. And so that standifies a one world currency, one that can ever be used. And they can put it into place pretty quickly. And the other thing to remember is, you know, we're talking political economy here. We're talking about all of these things, like Bitcoin and gold. They only have fungibility. They only have power if they are legislated to be off. We know at one point in time that gold was not allowed, you know, was not a public asset since before. So those are all decisions that countries and leaders make. They decide that a Bitcoin or whatever new invention is something that doesn't fit their scheme, it'll be outlawed. Such as gold was at one point, for practical reasons that they thought.
When you think about regional currencies like some of the South American countries with Russia to kind of subvert the
of the dollar. I think those are all possibilities. The fact is that we have more currencies today in the world than we had 50 years ago. We don't see any convergence on the currency side overall. Some of the things we heard today earlier from Soren about what's going on in Europe, we may very well have more currencies in Europe again sometime in the future. Let's talk of the studio and the euro and on and on. I just don't see why the world needs a one world currency. It could happen, but I don't think it's prophesied. And we have to remember too the most lucrative operation that banks have is currency trading. I know that for a fact. And today we trade, the last survey that was the BIS tabulated it at $5.4 trillion per day. It's the biggest trading activity in the world by far. And it's very lucrative for banks. They would only at death's door give up the franchise of trading currencies. So it's a very strong coalition.
I'm in the treasurer's office of a rather large corporation. I suspect you're a customer. You don't have to tell me how much you guys charge me for. So last question then. I want to know if you've seen a good answer to what unraveling the Fed's balance sheet would look like.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear that.
I was wondering if you have seen anything, and the answer is I don't know. But when they finally decide to unravel the Fed's balance sheet because they put all these assets into it, so at some point they would need to sell them. But
no, they don't.
They just hold them.
Yep, they can hold forever. Central banks in the Second World War the major trawl that existed at that time pretty much got to the same kind of condition that we have today, because we were buying war bonds and trying to fund the war effort and so forth. They never, as a group, they never bought back any. And this time around, for different reasons, I don't think they'll ever buy any back. They can just retire. It's all smoke and mirrors. Doesn't matter. And you must also know that when a central bank buys government treasury bonds, as they certainly have done to the extent of over $3 trillion in the view of the Fed, right? They get paid the interest rate. What do they do with the interest that they accumulate at the end of the year? They give it to the treasury. So effectively, they've reduced the national debt by buying it on the central bank's balance sheet. So it's a very wonderful magic.
Thank you both.
Bill?
With the executive order, what's to keep them from doing more executive orders? It's conjecture, but it's been suggested that climate change, internet control, that sort of thing would be some of the next steps. That's one question. The other question is, the Supreme Court is going to take up same-sex marriage now. It's the obvious. What's your forecast?
Joe, as far as the executive orders, I think, they brought John Podesta on the work with Bill Clinton. He's supposedly an expert at executive orders and had a certain amount of the Constitution. And he's been there for, six, kind of 9 to 12 months now. He's a George Soros guy. So I think they need to be, they might try on this on global warming and on internet control. You risk getting to a point where you could be impeached. And if I were in the leadership and he keeps trying to do this, even though Dershowitz talks about it's kind of a gray area, and in the long run he might be successful in court against the executive order because of constitutionally there and all the legal language. But I think if Obama keeps this up, Schumer and some other members of his party aren't real happy about the fact that their party is being decimated by a guy that has used so much of his political capital to get Obamacare through. Like, my mother's a longtime Democrat, and she's not a fan of Obama or her. And she said 6 years ago, he is spending too much time and too much political capital on Obamacare, where we have so many other things that need the focus. So he went for it. And his party got shellacked. There's only two people running for office and even asking to come and speak for him. This is unheard of.
One on law.
Yeah, and one of them lost in Maryland. A Republican was elected governor in a deep, dark blue state. After Obama went there and spoke for the Democrat. And then in Michigan, he spoke to some of the guys so far ahead, there's no chance of him losing. So, Joe, I think there needs to be some caution. I don't know if there's some, but I think the Congress at some point needs to. I have sensed that Senator Cruz is building a case as for impeachable offenses. I think last year he had a list of 57 things that he had put together. It was very precise. And Dershowitz says Senator Cruz is one of the smartest, if not smartest, guys you ever had in class. And Ted Cruz has the Constitution memorized. So, Obama can overplay his hand, and if he has some strong leadership, then these things. I'm not saying they're impeachable or not, but I think I would definitely approach it from that angle. Hey, this is ridiculous. Enough is enough. You're making a mockery of our Constitution, and you should be held accountable. As far as same-sex marriage, it's going to be a swing vote, probably. And you got the, Kennedy. Could be the deciding vote on that. You got the four Democrats. They're very pro-same-sex marriage. They don't want to touch it. They tried to avoid it, but it looks like it's coming back to them anyhow. So, there's a chance that we get put back to the state's decision. That it's not our, and I think Scalia is more or less alluded to that before. So I think this is not something we should be dealing with. This should be a state issue. So there, if they do take the case, there's a chance that it goes back to the states, because we have 33 states that said no. But we have activist judges that have made it a case. So that I'm hopeful that they can put it back to the states where the states make their own decision. And we're losing states now. Where we used to have, it was overwhelming, 33. No, we've lost 7 or 8 states now. So that's what it looks like at this point.
Thank you both. That's fine. My question actually is also about the economic collapse that you were talking about. I agree with you where it makes sense that it has to go through the second half, at least, of the tribulational period. But I was wondering about the rapture itself. I mean, we're just thinking that that would probably be America's doom. How can we, as a world, not have an economic collapse because of the rapture?
Well, good question. I haven't really ever thought about it through too carefully. If you could tell me how many people could be raptured, like, that's a good question.
That's awesome.
I'm not going to be trying to say
half a million.
Yeah, as I said, I've never really thought through that one through very, very carefully. I suppose no money is going to disappear if that happens.
America will be sent to its knees. I mean, if we lose 35, 40 million taxpayers, hard-working people from all different walks of life, it could be a devastating event.
The demand deficiency scenario.
Yes. Well, in Italy, we really hurt America, but we have such a small percentage of believers in Europe. They would be hurt because all of a sudden their number one economy, the United States, is out of the picture. So that would be a factor. But Europe would just keep ticking for the most part.
I'm certainly, some of our group here holds that view that it's going to be the rapture that, you know, will weaken America off the world stage as the 10 kings come before and that kind of thing. So that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, Bill, I have a question. Right here. Have you heard the news on the new Secretary of Defense?
I heard his name today, but I don't recall. I don't know anything about him. I heard he was nominated today. Did you catch his name?
No, not really. I was just wondering if you felt he was qualified or if you feel that there's somebody in the running who is qualified, who maybe they're overlooking. What are you even looking like? What are they looking for in the Secretary of Defense?
You know, that's always a good question. With the Secretary of Defense, they will listen to Susan Rice. I mean, Susan Rice is becoming an issue for this administration. Carrie's had problems with her. Hagel had problems with her. She's very smart. She's got Obama's ears. She was one of the Bill Clinton foreign policy apologists. Very smart lady. Worked for McKinsey and Company, made a lot of money. You know, it's going to boil down to a strong personality. The good thing is, it won't be addressed until after the new Senate's sworn in. So there's some real defense talks in the Senate. You've got to remember, Hagel only got 3 votes from his political party when he was nominated. I mean, most Republicans said, no way, he's not the guy. He's not the guy for the office. So I heard someone's name today. It didn't ring a bell. It was nominated today. But he better be strong because I don't think he'll get the nomination otherwise. And I think the Obama administration is smart enough to realize that. We need a Secretary of Defense. This is going to be a very difficult year, 2015. We need something strong.
Anthony Carter,
Ashton Carter?
Yes.
Any, you know anything about him? Or?
It wasn't officially nominated. He's at the top.
Okay. Well, that's the name I heard, too. Well, it'll be interesting.
I have a question for Bill. I heard that a House committee reported out on Benghazi. Is this the committee that Trey Gowdy is leading?
As far as I know, yes. And he's a prosecuting attorney, I guess.
But they reported out and they said basically there was nothing wrong with what happened in Benghazi.
Yeah, I heard that, but I don't have the details.
But that is a committee.
Troy Gowdy, really, I mean, he's committed. I can't imagine being the same committee I've heard that, but it's just rumor at this point. I didn't hear any specifics.
Yeah, no, I heard a House committee was reported out and said there's no problem with it.
Well, I mean, a Democratic, led by the Democratic
Party. No, I heard it was a bipartisan committee.
Wow.
But I want to know if that report out was Trey Gowdy's committee or not, because I don't get that from Trey Gowdy. I think he's going to dig a lot deeper.
No, I haven't heard that. I wouldn't think it'd be Troy.
Probably the previous one.
Previous
one that came out, led by the guy from California.
Okay, so Trace hasn't come out yet.
Right, he hasn't started as
well. Yeah, I didn't think so either, but I'm just, you know how the government
is. Yeah, the guy who really seems committed to it.
Yeah.
He's a bulldog, and a prosecutor, so hopefully he'll get to the bottom of it.
Bill, are there any residual Second Amendment issues in this White House before?
What was that again?
Any residual Second Amendment issues in the next 2 years before the next election?
I think it's safe right now. It's going to make a big difference having the Republicans in control of the Senate. And this is 55. It looks like it's going to be 55. Like Lander is going to get beat today.
That's 54.
It's 54 right now?
Yeah. No, 53 now.
Oh, 54. She gets it.
Yeah. Right. Is there any chance that the guy from West Virginia could switch over?
He's close. I mean, he's close. I mean,
Manchin.
He's close. I mean, I think you'll see. He might even vote more with the Republicans, but. He saw another lady down like in the States that's a Republican, so.
Yeah, he has no, there's no future in the Democratic Party in
Spectrum. Especially in coal mining state.
Right.
The bottom position in coal, so I think he'll be all right.
Okay, Bill. So who do you see as the Democratic nominee for the next election, and how would you advise the Republicans to select or
it's a tough call at this point. I think that everybody thinks Hillary's going to be the candidate. I don't know if her health is going to be an issue. Some people have believed that. Carl Rose said we need her full, health report. We need the whole suit. When she was basically out of office for 30 days. We need to find out exactly. One guy brought up John Kerry, and I said, well, another couple of months since being Secretary of State, John, he's pretty much worked his way out of any possibility by his lack of any success with his job as Secretary of State. He's a tough time to be Secretary of State, too. On the Republican side, it all boils down to who can get the money. The Republican establishment, just like the Democratic establishment, typically picks two people that they put the money behind. A quick note here. In 2004, the money is going to be behind Giuliani and Romney. Giuliani unexpectedly got out of the race for whatever reason, and Romney couldn't get any traction with the Christians. Huckabee wins Iowa and got the Republican establishment very, very concerned. So they got behind McCain. In 2008, Romney had plenty of money. They wouldn't raise plenty of money. And it's really going to boil down that. If I had to say right now, who can raise and even tell my hand on that? And I think he's right. That it's going to be $1 billion lunch. So who in the Republican Party can get a commitment of $500 million? Bush and Romney.
Surely not Herb Bush.
And I hear that. But I mean, it really boils down to who can get the bus. I've had three or four people this week that are very connected politically that are determined to get Mike Huckabee as the nominee, but I don't know where he's going to get the money. I don't think he can get the money he needs to be. He's a good candidate, a good potential candidate. He's doing really well financially right now, but I don't see the Republican establishment at this point giving him, raising the $300 to $400 million he's going to need to run.
What about someone like Ben Carson?
Dr. Carson is quite a guy, amazing story, but I don't think he's vice president maybe, or another position within the administration. But I think his lack of experience, political experience, will be a negative. His public approval is very positive. He's a very decent man with a great story. But I don't think he is going to be a Republican candidate.
Okay. Ted Cruz. Too far to, I like Ted Cruz a lot. Guy's got guts, but he's too far to right. I love the fact he's far to right, but he's too far to the right for to be elected president, I believe. You know, the Republican Party has a near divide between the moderates and the conservatives. The big money goes to the moderates. Karl Rove raises big bucks for the moderate candidates. The conservatives like Huckabee, Cruz, Rand Paul is certainly dead. They can't get the kind of money that they need. It's difficult for a conservative candidate to get the kind of money they need to run a good campaign on a national basis. And no independent will ever be elected.
I just have a question about ISIS. What do you think is the funds ISIS? Where do they get their money?
Well, it's been on the rumors. Qatar, some Saudi Arabian splinter groups. They robbed the Mosul bank and got away with about $500 million. They're making anywhere from, according to New York Times, about $2 million a day in oil revenue, putting their oil out of the black market. You know, they're making tons of money, and that's what they're trying to do right now, stop the money. But that bank robbery, that Mosul bank, put a lot of money in their pocket, plus they have some very good equipment. And who knows? I mean, you know, a lot of
smart people running.
That's right. Yeah. We've heard of Hezbollah, drug money, Hamas, drug money. Hezbollah is a very sophisticated,
good strategy.
Yeah. That's what I've heard about ISIS, and I think they are strategically brilliant. And they've really got a plan, and they're following it, and they've been successful to this point.
They're not the JV.
No, they are. They are. And the news today was that Al-Qaeda was... you know, talk about blowing up some planes in Europe to be somewhat of a recruiting vehicle to get people away from ISIS and on to them. So there's competition now between Al-Qaeda and ISIS. ISIS is so brutal that it's appalling to Al-Qaeda. Can you believe that? I mean, that gives you an idea of it. But I've been to think tank meetings in Israel recently and other places, and the who's who, as I shared tonight, the who's who of Islamic thugs from around the world are moving into this playing field. They're operating in the Middle East right now. And they have been in Afghanistan. Right now, it's been Syria, northern Iraq. That's where they've been playing. But Afghanistan is a great concern, too. That thing, since we're out of there, that could get out of control quick. And it's starting to right now. So ISIS is going to be around for a while. And I heard one day that, you know, we might have 1% of the world's Muslims might be considered radical. Well, 1% of 1.5 billion is a lot of people. Even if it's a half a percent, even if it's a quarter of a percent, it's still a lot. You know? And as we all know, it doesn't take a lot of these terrorists to create a lot of havoc and get a lot of international attention. From an advertising, I had one guy who equated to the point that from an advertising dollar, one suicide bomber walking into a synagogue or a restaurant or bus or anywhere else, we have front page news around the world for days. Look at the Boston bombers, how much press time they see. You know, if we could just stop that. Take that off the paper. Take it out of the media completely. I think it could have a positive impact.
Well, I'd like to get you to elaborate more on Bill's question over here about the needing a stable currency, or at least what I view the aspect is. I felt what you were really saying is that you need a stable dollar, you need something for the Antichrist to use during the tribulation period to control the economy. Is that what you were saying, rather than you couldn't really have a collapse of the...
I was referring to a financial system.
Yes.
And we had a related question earlier about, you know, in fact, there are currencies that collapse every now and then and get resuscitated. But these are mostly smaller countries. Most often, when those kinds of collapses happen, you start getting foreign interests moving into these countries, and you can get assets cheap, and the multinational companies move in and have some real opportunities. So, aside from that sort of peripheral action in smaller currencies, the focus wouldn't be on a specific currency, but a system, international payment systems that we have right now.
The major countries in the world would have to save their financial institutions if there was another big crisis, such as happened here in North America, as everybody knows, 2008-2009. Some huge powers were taken to bail out some of those companies, enormous amounts, but it was seen as absolutely necessary. And Satan does need a monetary system working of some kind. Ultimately, though, there will be some problems in the tribulation period where they will have to come up with some new solutions. But until then, we're going to have crises, and they often work to the advantage of the sophisticated. But in terms of the big global collapse that many ask about, I don't think that's something we as Christians need to worry about. Thank you. Much later.
Go ahead, Cassie.
I just wondered, during the lame duck period before January, whether the President Barack Obama might, does he have a chance to get a lot of judges through?
It's going to be a lot more difficult now because he needs a Senate approval. The Senate has been able to hold up a lot of his nominations, even without the Republicans being a majority. So, no, the Senate needs to approve future judicial appointments so they can stop it.
Well, I thought Harry Reid.
I thought Harry Reid
was a simple majority in the Senate, so I could see him running a bunch through in December, right?
Well, but in that case, you don't have to go through hearings.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the hearing kind of thing. Close to the recess, which is beneficial.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I had another question back when you were talking about the presidential future of 2017, or 2016, though. I wondered if what you thought of Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin.
I'm sorry?
Scott Walker.
Walker.
I didn't hear his name.
I think Scott Walker is a really, really good guy. I think he's a very viable candidate. I think he has a good future. I don't know if president's it right now. I mean, we're kind of used to having a charismatic mold. I think Scott has long-term potential. Paul Ryan is still popular. I don't know. Every time I hear Jeb Bush mentioned, I mean, he has stature, but a lot of people don't know Bush. Mitt Romney is a very likable guy. He's immortal. I mean, that a lot of Christians stayed home during the last election. I don't know. You know, especially when it looked like he might pull off. That last week and a half, 2 weeks, a lot of Christians said, oh, great, I won't have to ever vote for Mormon. I won't have to vote for Mormon, so they stay home and bottle on. So, Romney's squeaky clean. Charles Krauthammer says the Democrats did everything they could to find his closet, and he doesn't have one that exists. So, that's what squeaky clean is. And if the Democrats can't find their money, it just doesn't exist. I mean, especially Obama's team. So, the stature. Does Mike Huckabee have the stature to gain money? At this point, I don't think so. And I don't think the senators do a great call. I don't know. I think they have a tough time.
Isn't Huckabee rather liberal?
Is what about Huckabee?
Rather liberal?
Some people question him. I think one thing, he's a lot more conservative than every other candidate in the party, except for maybe Ted Cruz. There was some stuff that, we're not going to find a perfect candidate. There were some things that Huckabee, in some ways, it wasn't even fair when he won last time, that some of the Christian conservatives were uncomfortable with Huckabee. It was okay, fine, you got John McCain. that's what happened. I'd love to see a conservative candidate, but in our world today, the way it is, I don't think a conservative candidate will win. I wish it could. I'd love to see another Ronald Reagan, but, could Ronald Reagan get elected today? Yeah, maybe, but it would be tough. Especially when the Democrats get the vote out. Romney went, this is very interesting, at 4 o'clock, Romney literally, he and Paul Ryan were getting ready for a victory speech on the afternoon of the election. That's how close they thought they had it.
Republican establishment were celebrating in Washington. They thought they had it. They were already given potential cabinet posts or names to cabinet posts. The micromanagement of that election, and I have a friend that said that Republicans had attorneys in every precinct of America to make sure that there wasn't fraud. And they were convinced there was no fraud. But the Democrats have a way of turning out votes. They micromanage it. And they turned out people that the Romney campaign didn't even know existed. I don't think they're going with it that way. No. That they literally in Ohio, the day after Obama was elected, they were opening campaign offices in Ohio the day he got elected the first time. They have a machine, and ran by two Jews. They have an Axelrod and Blight. They did a phenomenal job.
Wilfred, about a year ago, Germany asked for Volbeck.
Apparently, those plans have been shelved, I read just recently.
Is that because there isn't any?
I would believe the Germans would be pretty sure it's there. I'm not quite sure why they've decided not to push that any further right now. I didn't pick up those details.
Just wondered if anybody was concerned about that at all.
I've heard rumors again. You know, it's one of these things that when these sort of aspersions come up, it's so hard to prove them.
Okay, last question. Just a comment. Being from the great state of Wisconsin, where our governor has been elected governor three times in one term. Scott is a very dedicated believer. I mean, he is out in front with his faith. But within the state, and almost every news person who interviewed him, are you running for president? And it's a not stated, but a very implicit process, promise to the people, I'm going nowhere for 4 years. Yeah. He's left himself wiggle room, but, you know, but great godly guy. Honestly, he's with my legislature for years, and maybe not enough horsepower for a national position like that.
Yeah, I think it's a wise decision, too. For various reasons.
Thank you all very much. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this opportunity to get together and hear these men who know a lot of what's going on. And we know that you control the world and that you're moving things in a certain direction. And we thank you for the opportunity to think about these things. And we pray that we would be able to use this knowledge and information to aid other believers in building them up in the faith.
I'm not saying it.